which one do you want?
The time, 9:50, and you just need to start with our meeting, where we're going to be here the two topics today. Though the second one is not that much of the presentation, but it was brought up because as members of this portfolio committee, we always question the way the department is reporting the budget. How do you collate the information from the provinces that is brought to us? And we agreed that one day we have that discussion just to say how truthful the information is, how do you verify it before you bring it to us? And the reason why we always raise that as members of the portfolio committee is that sometimes there is information that is coming from the provinces. From sometimes we find that that information we are fresh from the oversight as a control committee, we find that the information that is coming forth from what we have is too heavy, you know, it's totally different. So that is why we did question that, and we even said to you, we requested that maybe you just bring us how to do this, how to verify that information before you bring it to the control committee. So that is why I say that one, the second one will be more of a discussion between ourselves and yourselves as a department. But the first topic that is on infrastructure and recognition of small and non-vulnerable schools is one again of the very important topic, because when we look at that topic, it's where we are saying as a portfolio committee, when we talk of the dignity of our schools, the dignity of the learners and teachers down there, that is where we are looking at as to say, what is it that you are doing on the infrastructure, more on the eradication of the improper structures, mud structures that we had. We know where we are coming from. We've seen the department dealing with those improper structures, but what is the progress? Where are we as of now? And on that presentation, again, we always say, we always want you to draw that line where we say we're talking to the acidic program or project, and also what are the provinces doing with the, how do you call it, EIG? Are they utilizing it well to where, as it is called a grant, are they utilizing it for the purpose of the grant? If not, what is it that can be done better so that we see the provinces coming up in making sure that we fight this issue of infrastructure that is improper? And also the whole question of rationalization of small schools, we know we've been visiting various provinces, more especially in the West, in the Eastern Cape, where we always encounter problems and challenges when it comes to that. As to say, department, you know the challenge, what is it that you together with the province have done to make sure that we beat that challenge and make sure that those small schools and non-viable schools are being rationalized for the betterment of the conditions of teaching and learning. So that is what we are here for today. But for me, before we even get there, before we even do introductions, one other thing that is very important when it comes to the issues of infrastructure are the norms and standards for basic infrastructure in our schools, of which we know is at different levels, what you do at whatever year, but you know that the due date was November last year. Again, we would love to hear from you as to say how far are you when it comes to that, and incrementally, as we look at the norms and standards of infrastructure, what is it that you are going, how are you going to do? Are we going to see you moving along with the norms and standards that you have put for those schools? So that is why I say this is one of the peaks that we are eager to sit here and discuss and look and listen to the presentation that you are coming in and with the deliberations and the discussions coming from the honorable members, we hope that we move forward and assist each other in this topic and moving forward as a sector. I received the information that the delegation from the department is led by Dr. Whitley, of which, Dr. Whitley, I will let me welcome you with your delegation. We always say we know each other now, always the delegation from CBE, and you know us from basic education, but today, I will speak on behalf of the Portfolio Committee. When we look around, all of us here, we do see some new faces that we have never seen in the committee, so surely that will warrant us to have introductions. Maybe before I hand over to you, Dr. Willie, let me introduce myself and the members of the Portfolio Committee do the same so that you can lead very shortly again on those introductions that you keep that way. Your presentation. I am Nomadu Mirukina, I am the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee. Thank you very much, honorable members.
My name is Frederico, a member of this committee.
My name is Charles and Costa.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Temba Mistima, member of the committee.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm Graham Owoto. At the moment, the acting head for infrastructure, so that's the capacity in which I'm here today. I'll start over there. The colleagues just introduce themselves.
Chair, my name is Elijah Mshanga, Head of Communications at the Department of Labor and Education.
Thank you very much. We have just been joined by the honorable colleagues. Can I thank him?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. We'll start with the infrastructure. So Mr. Mapopo will do that one. That will be followed by Mr. Panda. All our schools have got access to those, and also The discuss the basic services, which is part of the presentation that we are going to make. We are going to show what progress has been done. When we made a presentation towards the end of last year, we indicated that there are some provinces that by the 29th of November had not met the targets set out in the normative standards. And what we did was for those provinces to indicate to us when and how are they going to make up for those projects that were not completed. And those projects were to be completed by the end of the current financial year, and we will be reporting on them of how far has we gone with regards to that. Secondly, with regards to the inappropriate structures, there are two issues related to inappropriate structures. There are, we will also be reporting on that as far as the ICT program is concerned, that one, there are also projects that were not completed and are still to be completed as far as the ICT program is concerned. The ICT program has got an additional year to go in as far as completing those projects that were not completed. But also there are schools that were identified prior to ICT program, and those projects are going to be factored into the provincial program going forward. And in the current infrastructure plans that we are receiving from provinces are indicating how are they going to address those additional infrastructure or inappropriate structures that were not addressed as part of ICT in the infrastructure program. As you would know, that Treasury has indicated that the program would be completed in the provincial program. So that is where we are. But also, Chair, just to give a differentiation between, especially when it comes to the basic services, especially as it regards to sanitation, for instance, we just need to make that distinction that for the 30-year period in terms of the non-test standard, it was to give those schools that do not have access or schools that does not have the sanitation facility. That we have achieved. But you still have issues where you have schools that do not have sufficient, for instance, toilet seats in relation to learner numbers, that the standard of service is not in line with the normative standard, and that falls into the 7-year target, and that is what we are currently providing. I'll now go into the presentation this is the outline of the presentation and the background that indicates that we have two programs, the ACIDI as well as the infrastructure, the provincial infrastructure program. The provincial program is funded through the EIG, the Education Infrastructure Grant, and the ACIDI part, the Accelerated School Infrastructure Delivery Initiative, is funded through this grant. And this is to address the presidential outcome one, and also Goal 24 in terms of our sector plan. Now, what are the areas that we are addressing in terms of infrastructure maintenance, upgrading, rehabilitation, replacing inappropriate structures, provision of basic services, address infrastructure or damage of infrastructure caused by natural disasters, and so on. This is the budget for the 2016-17 financial year. We have a budget of 14.9 billion divided into the ACIDI grant, the EIG, as well as the provincial equitable share. What we need to highlight, for instance, is that ACIDI constitutes about 15% of the total provincial or the total infrastructure program of the sector. And the balance is located in the provinces in terms of the EIG and the provincial equitable share portion. Chair, this slide shows the progress that we have made to date in terms of the number of schools completed at the provincial level, that is on slide 10. Since 2009, we have completed 684 schools on the provincial program. For the 2016-19 MTEF, we have targeted to complete 378 schools, that is on slide 11. And on slide 12, it shows the progress that we have made up to the end of the third quarter, which is 38 schools have been completed to date out of the 106 that have been targeted to be provided The next slide shows what I was talking about in relation to the achievement of the Northern Standard as it relates to basic services. Now, our target in terms of the provision of sanitation, it was 909 schools to be provided with sanitation facilities. As at the end of the third quarter, which was on the 31st of December 2015, we had provided 735, and 174 are still to be completed by the end of the financial year. When you look at water projects and electrification projects, we have already exceeded the target that we had set for the current financial year. For instance, if you look at water, 746 projects were targeted. We have already provided over 1,000, which is a variance of more than 347 more than we targeted. Similar with electrification, we have targeted to provide 296 schools with electricity, 446 have already been provided, which has exceeded the target by 150 projects. This slide just shows in terms of the provincial program where we are in terms of project implementation in terms of the IDMS, the Infrastructure Delivery Management System. We have a total of 8,700 projects at the end of December 2016. Half of those have already been completed or delivered, which is about 4,569. And the rest of those columns shows where are we in terms of the different stages of implementation in terms of your infrastructure program. You would see that the majority of our projects are at construction stage, and quite a sizable number has been completed. Over 1,419 were at between 76% and 100% completed. Those are the projects that we will be making sure that we have completed. Projects that are at 1 to 50, 50 to 70, some of them, because they are multi-year projects, they will be flowing into the next financial year. We have, in terms of human resource capacitation, 322 posts have been filled to date. Remember, this is about capacitating our provincial infrastructure units to ensure that we have requisite skills to manage our infrastructure program. We are making significant progress with regards to this. The challenge that we have is that there is quite a large turnover of especially your engineers and your quantity surveyors. We are competing with other government departments like Department of Health, Department of Public Health in terms of these types of things, and also with the private sector as well. But we are making progress with regards to ensuring that we have properly qualified people to manage our program. Now, when it comes to the ACIDI program, the baseline, we had a baseline of 510 when it comes to inappropriate structures. And to date, we have completed 174 schools, and we have a balance. Maybe Chair, just to give a bit of an explanation in terms of the balance. As the baseline is 510, and we have completed 174 schools. And out of the 510, 119 are currently under construction in different stages. Okay. Now, when you look at 174 and 119, we'll give you a total of 293 projects that are completed or at different stages of implementation. That leaves you with a balance of 217 schools. Now, these 217 schools, all of them are located in the Eastern Cape province. These are small schools that had to go through a process of mergers and rationalization. Now, what that project yielded was that we had a team that we constituted that assisted the province to deal with the mergers and rationalization. So out of the 217 that I'm talking about, you have 61 small schools that are isolated, that cannot be merged with any other school. Then you have 32 schools that were merged with other non-ACIDI schools to form big schools that we will be building through the ACIDI program. And the balance would give you 65 schools. These are 65 schools that have been closed that were initially identified in the program, but they have since been closed, so they are not going to be done. So that gives you the total and the balance of the 510 that we have initially identified. Progress with ACIDI. Currently, in this current financial year, we have 10 schools that have been completed. But we are projecting that by the end of the financial year, we would have completed 21 schools in the current program. This is to show the different schools that are at different stages. I've spoken about the 32 and the 61 schools. The 94 are at assessment, and then you have 59 in design and 4 that are at tender stage. This is the progress with regards to ACIDI in terms of your basic services, water, sanitation, and electricity. 306 electrification projects have been completed, 425 sanitation, and 615 water projects have been completed. There are some issues that we are raising in terms of what are the challenges which relate specifically to the provincial program, but what is it that we are doing? The main issue that we are focusing on in the next financial year going forward is the issue of maintenance of our assets. Because if we don't maintain our assets, they are going to deteriorate and we have to redo them. That is why we are ring-fencing from the next financial year a minimum of 20% of the EIG budget from every province to be dedicated to maintenance. And this is what we are monitoring as provinces submit their final infrastructure plan. We are monitoring to ensure that they give us the list of schools that would equate to the 20% of the EIG budget that will be dedicated for maintenance. The intention is that we will be increasing that amount over the years with the target that 60% of your budget should be dedicated to maintenance and 20% to new facilities. The one other issue that we are looking at is to improve the planning process for provinces, and that is the exercise that we are currently engaging in. Reporting as well, there is an improvement in terms of reporting. Skills availability, I've already reported that we have made significant progress in terms of skills, training, collaboration with the different departments. Of importance, Chair, that one needs to mention is the collaboration that we have created with the different departments like cooperative governance, human settlement, water affairs, energy, and rural development, but also to increase our participation at local level in terms of your IDP, such that our plans, when they are implemented, are already integrated into the local government planning cycle, so that we do not have challenges in terms of provision of facilities. Then we are talking about strengthening planning and monitoring capacity program. Now, in terms of budgeting, this slide on maintenance simply indicates that why we are talking about a 20% minimum in terms of maintenance, the maintenance budget. If you look at column 1, 2, 3, 4, you see that some provinces are not budgeting sufficiently for maintenance. So what we are doing is to sort of force provinces to budget appropriately. This expenditure was at the end of the third quarter, which is December, which is 74%, which shows that there is good progress. But the number of projects, if you look at the first column, only 3,392 schools were maintained, as opposed to the 23,000 schools that we have. So that is why we are moving aggressively towards increasing attention on maintenance. This is the total infrastructure budget at the end of January. One would need also to indicate that the Limpopo province received an additional budget of 177 million that was meant for the repair and rehabilitation of schools damaged during the Bowane protest. That allocation came in the adjustment budget and was allocated around January. What we have done is to ensure that the schools that have been identified to receive rehabilitation, we have already appointed contractors by the end of January. The contractors are on site in those schools. We also are using some of the money for the schools that were affected by disasters. Also, the DBSA is implementing that project on behalf of the Limpopo Provincial Department, and we have contractors already appointed in Limpopo to ensure that by the end of the financial year we have those projects on site. With regards to ACIDI, by the end of January, we have spent about 851. We are meeting with contractors on a weekly basis every Friday to get support back from contractors on progress that they are making, and we will be doing that up until the end of the financial year to ensure that we make progress on this program by the end of the financial year. So this is the projected expenditure by the end of the financial year in terms of ACIDI, and we have reasons for why there was slow spending throughout the financial year in terms of the ACIDI program. So what are the current projects? And this slide, the preceding slide will show what are the issues that had led to some delays and what is it that we are doing. But the current projects that are going on is that we have an implementing agent that has been appointed after we terminated the contract of underperforming implementing agents like the IDT and the CSIR. And those projects have been reallocated to another implementing agent. And we are seeing some good progress with regards to that. As I indicated, we have schools that are in implementation of the stages, the 32 schools and the 51 schools that I referred out on slide 36. And then we have the 36 schools that were allocated to IDT and National Department of Public Works. Just to mention, honorable members, that we also, because we saw that the IDT and the Department of Public Works were underperforming quite significantly, we took 20 schools from their initial allocation and reallocated 15 of those schools to the DBSA, which is performing very well, and 5 of those schools to Kuha Development Corporation. So the reduction of scope has seen some progress with regards to those schools, and that is one of the reasons why we did not move as fast as we have. And these are the punitive measures that we are seeing to implementing agents that if you don't perform, we are going to reduce the scope of work that we are giving to you. And finally, we are not going to give you any additional work going forward in this program. So that is what we are doing. We did that with the basic services program. We are doing that with inappropriate structures to ensure that if you don't perform, we are going to take projects from you, give it to other ICs that are performing. Yeah, these are just photos of some of the schools that we are completing, and I'll give over to the chair. I don't know if I should be talking about it.
Chair, I will just go through the section dealing with the rationalization of small and non-viable schools. While the presentation, the presentation covers all 9 provinces, but really my focus will be on 3 provinces, because if you look in statistics from 2010, using the norms and standards that define what is a small school, you will see that the majority of these schools are really concentrated on 3 provinces. Also, if you look at statistics from 2010, you can see that, for instance, Free State started about 20% of their schools were sort of more or less non-viable, but the figure has gone down. It means the provinces are doing something about it. So our focus as a sector should be on these 3 provinces. Maybe then that's why I won't deal with the other provinces, but the information is there. Maybe just to reinforce the purpose of the measure is aimed at improving the quality of education expediting the resourcing of schools, promoting access to schools, and ensuring the retention of learners and educators, especially in rural and farm schools. This process is catered for in Salfa. Also, I must indicate, Chair, that while we started this process 5 years ago, and the process was a bit chaotic because in the sector we didn't have a minimum uniforms norms and standards to define what is a small and what is a non-viable school. So the regulations relating to minimum uniform norms really assisted a lot, because there we know what constituted a small school. In terms of the norms, any primary school should consist of at least 135 learners. If the school have less than that, then the school is regarded as non-viable. Then the other one is now relating to high schools. At least the high school must have the minimum of 200 learners. Now, starting with KZN, because our statistics, as I indicated, they tell us that KwaZulu-Natal, Eastern Cape, Limpopo, those are the provinces where we still have high number of these schools. So as a result, then KZN started this process vigorously in November 2012. But this project, KZN, it was not just about matching closing the non-viable schools, but it was the whole process of rationalization, looking at consolidation of small non-viable schools, eradicating of satellite schools, reduction of multi-grades, streamlining of typologies of the schooling system, for instance, to make sure that we've got either primary school and high school. Those were the situation where a school will start from grade 1 to grade 10. Now it involves that. Also, renaming of schools. We had schools that are named after Amakhosi of tribal leaders with names that sometimes they're not desirable, like Matangi Chinchi High School, Mkwazeni High Schools. So those are the things that the project was dealing with, which is mostly a sensitive matter. But then the provision of ECD classrooms to all public schools and the establishment of maritime schools. So they introduced, the program was introduced in all 12 districts, but because they had such a high number of schools that are falling below this threshold, so they started with those schools with less than 50 learners. 64 primary schools, as well as 200 schools were identified for merger for 2016-17. So far they've met 171 non-viable schools. And the model that they are using there is to, when they merge schools, then is to build boarding facilities. I think they copied that model maybe if I can just indicate, Chair, that in case at hand, the huge problem that makes this project not to move is that they do identify schools, but now because of their budget of on-scholar transport, for instance, it's about 180 million. So when I engaged with them, they said, look, with the manager, that if I can get at least 200 million, then we can be able to move. So that's the process that sort of stalled the project there, because our directive to them is that if you identify that the school is non-viable and it must be merged, but if there's no school and transport, then the status quo will remain. You don't need to close the school and learners will be subjected to long distance. So, moving to Eastern Cape, which is also, I would say, is the one with the highest number of small and non-viable schools. I mean, states are there. There's 2,077 schools. out of that, 1,902 have been prioritized. They were given notices according to Section 83 of SASSA. I even attended the meeting where the district directors they came to give accounts in terms of who has received those notices signed by the principal. What I want to indicate also in the same case is that they have appointed government technical advisory center. It's led by a former HOD of the province. Because this process, my observation, because I've been given that task by the DG to coordinate at least the three provinces, my observation is that this process, it doesn't move with the desirable speed if you don't have a separate dedicated resources focusing on it. That's why in the same case, really, as I indicated, there's a structure that's dealing with the process. That's why, Chair, even when we reschedule the portfolio committee in Port Elizabeth, the district director there provided clear statistics in terms of how many schools that they were going to match, how many that they were matched, so they had clear targets. So because of this dedicated resources to this project. What I can say, Chair, in Limpopo, which is the last project that I will deal with, the MEC identified 301 schools with 53,000 learners for matching in 2013. As of 9 December 2016, 177 have been matched and 20 schools were closed. So what I can say, in Limpopo, the model that they are following there is creating what we call mega schools. So they will match four or three schools, then out of the create a mega school and provide scholar transport. Whereas if you duplicate it, it's boarding facilities. But the challenges, Chairperson, the challenge is the delay in the delivery of mobile classrooms, especially because when you merge, then you must provide, there may be need to provide extra classes. So as to not wait for building then, is to provide mobile classes. Also delay in the provision of scholar transports. Because, for instance, we find that, I know in one district, I think it's Waterberg, where then they had a problem with the tender, because those were tendering, when they see that the route is not profitable, then the number of those who are sending tenders will tend to be small. So there was that delay as well in providing scholar transport, especially in that area. Also schools that are objecting to merger. I think this one is mainly confined to Sikukuni district. All other districts, really, Limpopo is one province that I can say the project has moved smoothly, only except with those two certain projects that are indicated. As I indicated, there's hostels, but also mega schools that are being resourced to accommodate those there. I mean, for instance, Limpopo Department, they will close with provincial treasure. Because treasury, they know that this rationalization, Chairperson, is also a way of dealing with inefficiencies in the system. Because, I mean, there's clear empirical evidence that non-viable schools, they tend to perform badly. Especially, I mean, if you look at in NSC results. Because now we find that there are three schools, small of them, and they're offering three of them, they're offering different streams. And we know that in terms of our PPN, we allocate teachers according to the number of learners. So then you find the teacher only specialized in one area, but now offering all other areas. Then that's why we find that even the result will be affected. So in Limpopo, they even were allocated additional funding by provincial treasury to deal with the scholar transport. With them, it's totally different with KZN. KZN is the issue of insufficient scholar transport. Chairperson, I think Mpumalanga states are there, but those to me, those are not issues. I think those are small issues. Mpumalanga, Northwest. I mean, Northwest, you can see they even handed over the provincial states. It's where they handed over those visits to Department of Parks and Recs. Because I think one thing I must mention, Chairperson, that I think we did well as a sector was to provide direction to provinces. Because when this project started, as I indicated, there were no norms to say what is a small school. So through infrastructure of Mr. Mafogo, they assisted a lot in coming up with those norms. Then secondly was to say, how do we guide the process? Then we came up with the guidelines. So guidelines, they assisted a lot in terms of giving a direction to say, what is the process that must be followed when you are rationalizing the schools? So the process is very clear. It's clear in terms of provision of resources, like additional classes, also in terms of deployment of principals, because we find that the school, if you are making four schools, so there must be a process to identify one principal so that there won't be any confusion. It's also very key in terms of the consultation, because when I recall, Chairperson, that previously there were many litigations because we did not provide leadership in this. But since we provided guidelines and provinces were workshopped, they were consulted about the process that they need to follow when they, before they even close or merge a school, we've seen less and less of those litigations. As well as the, I think I've dealt with the issue of also the transfer merging of files, because we find that there will be different accounts of these schools now. That process of making sure that there's one account for school funding, for NSNP, so all those things. So the guidelines, really, I would say, they assisted a lot in terms of providing guidance. Free State, to me, is a good story, because as you can see, they've prioritized those learners with less than 21, because I mean those schools with less than 21 learners, because they've got main farm schools. So, but they make sure that in terms of curriculum delivery, then they deal with those schools by, for instance, broadcasting of lessons, working through with the University of Free State. That's why in terms of their performance, even though they've got many of these small schools, but they are doing well, because they've got a very comprehensive strategy to deal with those small schools. But as I indicated, that in 2010 they had about 40% of those, but now the percentage is around 20%, between 20 and 30%. So which means that they are dealing with the problem of closing these schools. It's only these three provinces that have started late. So that's why even our focus is to be on the Congo, Eastern Cape, and Western Return. So, Chair, I would recommend that the Royal Committee discuss the progress on the implementation of infrastructure and the rationalization of small and non-private schools.
Well, thank you very much for the presentation. Though, with the second part of it, Mr. Mpanza, for me, really, when you don't touch all the provinces, I don't think we are doing justice to the system. I think there's nothing that has been said, but we do get a lot of reports when it comes to the issue of rationalization, small schools, the challenges that are coming up there. Same thing with the Western Cape. Because for me, that will say with those provinces that said nothing has been mentioned of the Cost of Living is well there. Also, come to the Western Cape is one of the provinces that has got a lot of challenges when it comes to the ground school, a lot of multi-graded schools, a lot of challenges when it comes to the issue of conservation and the rationalization thereof. So I really feel the report is not complete. The two provinces, maybe it's what we are continuing from what we were saying last week and today, we tend to turn a blind eye when it comes to housing in Western Cape. As we purpose this thing is well improved. Let us not sit on the time bomb that is going to explode at any time, because when it comes to these issues on those two provinces, we've got record, there is a lot that is happening there. So clearly moving forward in the questions that will be coming, I would really love to see having something even on those two provinces, but it's not as if everything is well improved when it comes to that. Honourable members, that was the presentation, and it came up then for discussions and questioning and additions when it comes to the issue of infrastructure in our country, looking at the two methods that is achieving, remembering that 15% of the contribution towards what the provinces need to be doing when it comes to the issues of infrastructure. Can I open up that for you on our members to discuss? Honourable Mr. Costa, I'll start with you, the hand is up. Honourable Machesti, Honourable Mr. Mann, Honourable Osho, Honourable Mwuni, Honourable Mokoto, in that order, please. Can you start on the question?
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, I'll start by appreciating the report. I'm having two or three issues to raise. One, the first issue I wanted to check with you is whether are all the schools that have got serious infrastructure challenges, do we have a list of those, or even if it's a province, do they have such a list prioritized? And if yes, they have the list prioritized, who prioritizes such list? And the other issue is to check as to what are the possibilities of us as members to have those lists, because one, when you go to district to request some, it's just difficult to get those lists. Because when you go on oversight or you do constituent work, you are not able to talk to it, because even if you have got an IDP document, the IDP document from the municipalities, you know, changes every time, because the projects are shifting. We wanted to know if really the department has at least prioritized and will be able to, you know, it's easy to talk to the people to say, yes, we have seen this challenge, but we are going to address you in 2 or 3 years. In 6 months, we are going to address you, to assist you. But if you have got nothing at hand, you are not able to assist the people, then you do not make a sense to them. They don't take you seriously. The other issue, Ms. Mpanza has mentioned the delays in provision of scholar transport, but before you mentioned it as a criteria to do rationalization and merging of the school, does it mean that in Limpopo they only implement before looking at the criterion that you have mentioned, that we look at transport and the like? And the other issue is to check with the department the relationship between these two departments, education and the Department of broaden transport, because I think if one other issue that they need to do when we are doing roads, we need also to look at which road must be done first. I think the road to schools, road to clinic, must be looked at if we are doing that. I wanted to check if there is a good relationship with them. Lastly, we understand that we are coming from a very difficult situation, but you know, we need to be having a plan as to how are we going forward with regard to assisting with building this school. You know that some of the schools, you know, you would talk maintenance, those that one has visited, there is nothing to maintain them. You just need a new school, there is nothing that is going to maintain. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Mashesi.
Thank you, Chair, and also thank you, City Department, for the presentation. I think mine is the first question on the pit toilet. We discovered that only 4,624 schools are yet to still have toilets being installed. They have at the moment currently a pit toilet. And according to norms and standards, the case states that they shouldn't be. It's not allowed to have a pit toilet. And this issue has been an issue to rural areas for a very long time, and up to now it hasn't been addressed. So I just want to find out what is it that is actually stalling this process of getting rid of this challenge. Because one would think that, for instance, if you look at the different budgets that have been allocated, like for, which actually they just specify, like if it is a budget for the toilets, and if also then the allocated budget has been utilized to get rid of the people. So I just want to find out why this is so long. And now, given the fact that the norms and standards clearly state that by last year, December, as the gentleman mentioned, that it has become now illegal to have those people. So what is it that the minister is doing to make sure that we get rid of that, of those people? The other issues are based on planning and implementation. One of the slides, you mentioned that when it comes to projects, for instance, if you have to build a school, you would actually ask, probably, that's what I would understand, the project manager to identify all of the schools or the department to identify different projects. But then the budget can actually cover those different projects. And the reason why you're doing that is because in case that you are unable to manage the particular project, then you can be jumped into another project. So I just want to find out the type of planning that you make that in that sense. Why is it that you can jump from one project to the next instead of making sure that you finish that particular project? Because then it's going to be a problem. So if you have a problem with being a target of number of schools to build, over a certain period of time, then if you are going to be jumping around from one project to another, then how are you going to be able to manage the target that has been allocated? And also, when you say the targets themselves, they have to be, if you say that the province has been given so many schools to build, are you coupling that together with the budget based on the norms and standards? Is the budget also allocated on the targeted schools that have been given? And the schools, once again, we see that the Eastern Cape, I think it was about 11% of its budget that they utilize when it comes to maintaining the schools. I think it's second lowest. But I just want to find out what steps does the department take to make sure that budget, that if the budget has been allocated, why can't the department or the provinces make sure that, like, you know, they utilize those the budget that has been allocated? What steps do you take? What, you know, is there accountability? because now the wiring sets is affected, especially with the national standards, the department is the possibility that communities can basically sue the department for not delivering on the.
Thank you, Joy. Thank you, Olaf Macheski. Olaf Macheski.
So I also
appreciate the number of schools that have been electrified because it seems the department has exceeded the target that came. But I don't know whether it's fact or perception. There is this feeling, strong feeling that there is bias towards urban schools. Many schools in the rural area are lagging behind, and I find this to be somewhat discriminatory in that we are producing two types of learners, learners who come from well-equipped schools and learners who come from poorly equipped schools. So I would be happy if this is a mere exception, it's not really, because we still have many, many learners in the whole area who eventually compete with the learners from urban areas and find that it's unfair competition. In spite of everything that is said in the presentation, water supply is still a big problem. We visited a number of schools early this year, some of them very well-doing schools and things, and I remember when we visited this Mali in Kanda district, it's actually in the Kingwedral district, the teachers will say they sometimes close schools because of lack of water. They sometimes have to use their own vehicles to go and fetch water. One could say, well, we have had an unprecedented drought starting from next year, maybe this is what has happened. But one would like to know more as to government and the departmental plan in dealing with the shortage of water in schools. I've spoken about electricity, but there is also one very worrying factor when it comes to the electrification of our schools and the billing by our municipalities. It is way out of the available resources in schools, and many of them are in danger of having their electricity cut because they are simply not affording to pay for electricity. It was nice to know that the department works with other sister departments and other departments with the pastors. I wish they could really talk to COPSA about what the municipalities are doing in overcharging the schools for the supply of electricity. Thank you very much, Chair. I think I'll end.
Thank you very much, Honorable Suman, Honorable Bishop.
Thank you very much, Chair. It is clear that the information that we get from the provinces is not the correct information. Personal Oversight has indicated that 358 schools in Mpumalanga do not have access to adequate sanitation. Listening and reading the Premier's address, he said these schools would be provided with the adequate sanitation by the end of 2016. We are now in March 2017 and these schools are still without sanitation. Another problem in the Nkomazi area, there are 100 learners to a class. And I'll give you the name of the school, it's the Mashlaba Primary School. This is because sanitation basic services have not been provided at the newly erected or constructed Ilanga Secondary School. There is just no way that a teacher can teach with 100 learners in a class. And one can have a look at the broader situation. There will not be enough water, there will not be enough sanitation. Another worrying factor is that a promise was made that a school for the deaf would be built in Mpumalanga. This still hasn't materialized 3 years down the line, because apparently there's not enough money and another excuse that was given is that there's no land available. But what is strange is that the budget was increased from 250 to 350 million. Why increase the budget if you are not going to build the school? So I want the department to look into this as well. And then with regard to non-viable schools that have been closed, have we got any report on whether these school learners from the closed schools have been taken up in other schools? Because I know many parents have said to us that they're not going to send their learners to those schools. So we need a report on whether these schools, these learners have been incorporated into these new schools. We are also uprooting family structures by doing this. Many of these learners are lifelong learners. It's just not fair. They are working 10 metres to their school, but now they've been uprooted, and they can go home once a term because there's no transport available because they come from the poorest of the poor communities. And then another thing, I see you say seven small schools in Kandla were closed and merged with these 20. But you are still consolidating the deployment of teachers. So what happens now while the consolidation of these teachers is taking place? Do the teachers then come from the merged or closed or non-viable schools, sit at home? Do they get paid? What is the story? What is the amount they are spending on it? I think we need a report on that as well, please. And I have been around in the Nkomazi area, and there is a school that closed. Lovely desks and chairs were just left behind. Nothing happens. I've mentioned this on various occasions, and we still haven't seen a report on that school. What happens to these non-viable schools when you do close them? What happens to the infrastructure that is at that school? Could we have a report on that as well? And then what do you do with that building? Because I cannot recall the name of the school in Kamadi, but I'll get it for you. It was one of the most beautiful buildings with these beautiful environmental friendly toilets. That building just stands there. What do we do with that building? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Bishop. Honourable
also, James joined the same general report from the department. And then I also appreciate the work they're getting. I had this ma'am, I don't know the chairperson, you said ma'am? You say that the strategy on reporting. The strategy of reporting. And reporting. I think strategy of reporting. Strategy. So I want to talk about the issues on the ground and what we are reporting. That, do you have any way of monitoring what you are reporting and what is happening on the ground? If we can align, do we have any strategies to align the children? Let me make an example. When we have been to Eastern Cape, we meet the NCOP. Yes, there are schools that have been merged. But on the issue of communication, when we had this, we called this report together, this all said it's better. There hasn't been proper consultation. Remember, all the chiefs were there. There hasn't been proper consultation, including the measure of a district. I think there was a district measure there around Matasiema. And then on the issue of when the school has been merged, what is the plan? Was it one school in Limpopo? We found there were two principals in one school. How is your planning on that one? Well, that might give some kind of a conflict. Principals, was it two lions? Is it two lions in the same place? And then they have a problem. Right. Then this scratching, when we have done this measure, you say, you know, you want to deal with this offensive measures in school.
Yes.
Yeah, you have made one. I know one around it. It's called MAPP High School. But when you follow, you find it. There's one even in what they say was a place called Madawa. Madawa is the village. Madawa village. But you know, when people started to scratch that name, they said, no, that is the name of the person who's responsible. So we cannot, how can you change the name of the person? You take that into consideration. Because you will fight against the chiefs of the particular area. The planning, the structure, the measure has been completed. One pool has been left there, like a white elephant. What's the plan about that? What's the plan? Will it end up having people doing drugs in that? What's the plan? And who's going to take care of that one to check the security for that one? Then, when we're dealing with infrastructure, I believe that technological infrastructure does get it in here. How do you deal with technology? You know, we have been to the Eastern Cape. Even we were struggling to get network ourselves. Network. They had computers, they had that big, what is put by Sun Tech. But it's not working, or it takes almost the whole day to connect. Well, what do you deal with those people? When they object, more especially in Sikukuni, you said that they are objecting. What are the reasons for these people objecting? And then I'm not happy with Northern, with the rural provinces, Northern Cape, KZN has got three RCD programs, not counting the Northern Cape and the Jefferson as alluded to. What is the criteria of, because you see, yes, in Eastern Cape there was a problem, but they've taken a chunk of the thing. It must be assisted. But what about the other rural areas like KZN? KZN is the biggest. I don't want to compare it to the And then I don't want to take more. I have put a lot of them. I don't know what I'm going to give. Let me just put one then I go. I don't explain anything. I have not been explaining.
One on top of that.
I was just naming than explaining. You see, it's different. Shepard, you know now we are taking time. Can I name it? The asbestos issue, acidity, the maintenance of the long standing. Building. We are speaking about the maintenance of our city. What about those ones that have been there? Cracking, they are not safe. They are not safe. Let me stop there, except saying that, you know, are we also checking the deliverance of the curriculum? The schools have been made. 12 farms have been made. I know that you have worked with my friend, but they have been made. How is the curriculum? You know what happened? I went to one school. I think around 15 there. You see, that one that has been built. When I go to there, no. Education is not, the curriculum is not going well. I also monitor in the schools that have been made, and so in fighting and so forth. Are you monitoring those?
Thank you, Honorable.
Mm-hmm.
Honorable Court.
Thank you, Chair. I also want to appreciate the efforts delivered by the department. I also have questions that are need to raise for the department, particularly around the issue of understanding. Because for the past few years, we've been thinking about understanding and the possibility that it might likely impact on the final audit outcome for the department and also the budget allocation in future years. I just wanted to check what are the plans in place to try and circumvent that problem, because you have already highlighted the challenges on slide number 21.
and that in the presentation there was not sufficient elaboration as to the action to correct and intervene. Whereas we understand the fact that provinces might, as the region and in infrastructure, might be having their own dispensation, you know, in terms of the government outcome too. But the lens for the new commissioner, the issue of capacity of the service providers, I think so maybe it can clarify as to what is happening. And in your report also you highlight the fact that you have employed some people on the staff skills or the specialized skills. So I wanted to check if those people, they are part, they form part of the, they also include people that will be going to provinces or that will have the program in provinces or. And then maybe last thing on that point is to check when you intend to fill all the vacancies that are identified there. The other point that I wanted to raise is the fact that you have highlighted on the issue of maintenance, and I think it's one of the killers for our department, for generally within government. I appreciate the emphasis that you have placed on the issue of maintenance of a certain amount for maintenance purposes. But I want to check it if that does flow even to the school level, because I think it must run from to that level. If not, I want to focus that maybe it's one area that we have to look at, because it's the functions of schools as well in terms of maintenance. The other point, Chairperson, is on the issue of the schools that have got serious infrastructural problems. Like when we go on oversight, we see a lot of schools, and even when we are not doing oversight, we still see that some schools that have got sanitation issues, you know, water issues, electricity issues. I want to check if they are on your list, on your project list, or if they are on the provincial project list, and then how do we deal with that? Because like, it becomes a very embarrassing for us to go on oversight, and we're not able to intervene, we just go there to show face. So is there any plan for you to put them, having noted the fact that you say that you have backlogs because some of the projects, you know, you end up dumping them for new projects. Can't you take those ones that you have identified, intervene on those ones, or invest the money to maintenance? Because I would suppose that the National Treasury also highlighted to all levels that maintenance should be one of the biggest chunks in terms of the budget. So can't we maintain, if we fail to deliver schools, can't we change the budget to maintain what we already have once we are waiting? For instance, we could have that we have had a problem of rationalization in the Eastern Cape. And I'm still wondering what was happening, because every year we budget for Eastern Cape, and the following year the new budget comes in. What happens to that one? Does it lie in space or what? Maybe if we can get any input on that one. I also wanted to add on the issue of honorable review, on the issue of ICT and communication infrastructure. It's one of the issues that I think there should be justification as to why are we not getting it as a part of the report. I'm also interested on the issue of solar provision and usage thereof, because we know that a lot of schools, either they can't afford to pay the high bill, or they are not within the, you know, the grid. So why as government, as the department, are we not prioritizing solar use in our our schools? The issue of boarding schools that you talked about, where are the money for funding them? Because in KwaZulu-Natal, there are so many schools that students need that are so many when they say they wanted boarding schools, they wanted a boarding school and all that. But in the budget, I have never seen that. Chairperson, I just wanted to stop there, but before on the issue of expenditure, I just wanted to check with the department of, like, where I haven't graduated, that even with the budget is $1 billion, and so far the expenditure is 100 something million. How do we intend to, you know, to catch up on that budget? Because I think by now we should be planning, and then together with the, you know, where there is not a strong unit within the department, but how are you working to check yourself? Because I think, you know, the way the AG will view the department is going to be mainly based on your unit. So I think let us check what is happening around that area and take proactive action to prevent the disaster in check. Thank you, Honourable.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I'll be quite brief because I'm aware that we've had quite a lot of time for questions. I just want to talk about the rationalisation of schools. It strikes me that there's quite a staggering number of school closures on the cards. 855 non-viable schools in KZN. 20 schools have already been closed in Limpopo with 53 earmarks for closure. And in the Eastern Cape, 1,902 schools are to be closed. Now, these are huge numbers of schools, Jennifer. I want to go back in time a little bit, because I want to unpack the history of school closure. In 2012, the Western Cape province identified 27 schools. So around 10% of the number that's been earmarked in the Eastern Cape for closure. Now, this was vigorously opposed by a number of stakeholders, including the Western Cape ANC, led by Maureen Swanson at the time. To the extent that the ANC put together a coalition called the Save Our Schools Coalition and worked with its alliance partner SASU to protest and lead marches regularly on the Western Cape Education Department, and it culminated in a court case, which was the outcome of which was ultimately overturned by the Supreme Court of Appeal, and the Western Cape was given the opportunity to continue with its rationalisation programme. Now, given the history of opposition to school closures, and this really dominated the discourse for a good few months in that time, has there been any opposition to the closure of these schools, including the 1,902 schools in the Eastern Cape? Has there been any opposition? Who is opposing the school closures, if there is any opposition to it? And do you have a stakeholder management plan in place to deal with potential opposition? Because as we've seen in the past, these plans can be derailed by opposition in civil society and from political parties. So if you could just give us a bit of background information on what you've done to manage the various stakeholders, including, of course, SASU, which was against the closures in the Western Cape. And they're obviously a huge stakeholder in the Eastern Cape and most other provinces, for example. Then, Chairperson, in this regard, I think it's important for us to establish as a committee what is our position on school closures. Given that historically the majority party has been against school closures, so when there were 27 schools earmarked for closure in the Western Cape, the ANC protested and took the government to court.
You said, Honourable David, you are not politically, but you are politicians, but let me correct that.
The majority part has never been opposed to original education. Let me put that clear. It's the ruling party that is really within the government and the department. And rationalization, unless you are saying your rationalization, the same came from the opposition, which is not the truth. So let us put things into correct perspective. As to say in various provinces, what are the reasons? I thought that was your main question, effect, as to say, maybe what are the various reasons coming from various provinces when they are opposing? Like, we are all here, we are members of this committee, we know exactly what were they saying in the Western Cape on the issues of consultations and so forth. I thought that should be the reason coming up. But for you to say the ruling party is opposing, that is absolutely not correct. The ruling party is there. These are the policies that are coming with the ruling party. Oh, you just cannot say that. You can rephrase it. Yes, talk to, refer to the Western Cape, the way they have done. But I thought that your first question was asking to that, as then the department will give you those responses. Because I can tell you, I can assure you, we even called the stakeholders of the Western Cape before you even were the member of the committee. Those were the things that we had discussed, but it was never the way that was doing. So with that one, really, I would love you to rephrase your question, but not say that the ruling party is opposed to them. Rationalization won't be there if we were opposed to them.
Chairman, I'm not going to rephrase my question, but I appreciate the clarity that you're giving us. Because what you're in effect saying is that the Western Cape ANC had a very different position from the National ANC. And if that is the case, then that is fine, and we'll accept that the Western Cape ANC went rogue on that particular matter.
Not politics,
it's not about politics,
Chairperson. I said they might be risen, as I stated once, when we met with the stakeholders, one of the reasons was on the issue of consultation, which is not with the reason of the Western Cape. So go to the Eastern Cape, it's the same thing that is happening. So for you to say in a certain province they differ from the national is not what I said. So just don't quote me wrongly. Say what you want to say, but really what I'm warning you is to say don't feed what is not there. Don't feed us on things that are not there, please. As a fact now, we are saying, you are just quoting me on something that I did not say.
Thank you, Chair. But, you know, I can show you 100 speeches and statements from the Western Cape ANC that is against school closures in the Western Cape. So please explain to me what was that about? Why did the Western Cape ANC oppose school closures, but the ANC nationally supports school closures? That's what I'm trying to understand. I don't understand that. That's what I'm trying to understand. So I'm asking for clarity on that, because I think as a committee, we need to know exactly where all of us stand on this rationalisation project. And it's very confusing that in the Western Cape, the ANC was against school closures, but nationally in ANC-governed provinces, the ANC is for school closures. That's very confusing. So we need to get some kind of clarity on that, please, Chair. The second part of my question is, what is the impact of school closures on children? Because after all, it's the children that will be impacted the most in their future. Now, I would like to know how many children in each of these provinces will be without a school when the school is closed, and what plans are in place to ensure that no child is left behind in any of these provinces and that they all have a decent quality school to go to. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Davis. Honourable Kwaza.
Thank you, Chair. I think I would be very short compared to the other speakers who wanted to be short, but presented the things that can be had. Chairperson, I want to check with the department in terms of the quality of the infrastructure. So how do they assure, or how do they quality assure that the structures that are built are of good quality, that they can stay long and last long? Attached to that, even the kind of furniture that is provided to those newly built structures, that they can last as long. We are, however, worried, Chairperson, with the low spend in terms of their city. If you look at the target that is set by the department vis-a-vis the actual spending that that the department managed to spend. I think if there's somewhere that I picked the 2.1 million as a target and the 636 million as the spending that is there in terms of the department. With the sanitation, I'm a little bit worried because sanitation is very key in a school situation. If the department will achieve less in terms of sanitation, which is very key, and the person cannot have any alternative when nature calls. So what plans do you have as a department to quickly address the issues of sanitation in our school? Lastly, Chair, the issues of norms and standards when it comes to the Bureau of Budget, somehow it directs the municipalities to target the money that is earmarked for municipality, more especially in rural areas where we know that there are no services that are rendered to the schools, but today the federal budget is indicating that there's so much money that is there that is supposed to be channeled to the municipality. So hence they can come up with a program to extract the money from the schools because it is there. It is allocated to municipalities. I think somehow there's something wrong because when, that is my take, that when feasibility study is being done, it is done in urban areas, not taking into account the issues of the rural areas. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Let me also add a few, you talked of the 20% of the EIG to the reference for maintaining. Of which it would, I think all of us, we are commenting that way. But for me, the basic question would be, we are talking of this EIG that is already with the provinces. The challenge that you always face, that you always come and report to us, even when we go to the provinces, we find that even what is allocated to them, it's a grant, of which I always believe a grant is for a certain purpose. But with this one, if you can talk to us, are we really seeing the EIG in the provinces being utilized for it or for what it is supposed to, vis-a-vis the equitable share that is put in the province? Because whenever we talk of infrastructure, it's as if RCD is there to, was introduced to take over the powers from the provinces. And whenever we talk of the depth of infrastructure thereof, what should happen, and understanding the concurrent functions that are there. But yes, in as much as I agree, the back will stop with the department to give EE report. But really, for me, sometimes we miss the line as to say where EIG goes, how far does it go, is it utilized correctly? That is why we even have sometimes the presentation where the department will come and talk to us on the grants that you issue to the provinces as to say, are they utilized for what they are given to? And then with this IEG, if we can get to that briefing, so that we don't get a side of the 20%, whereas even the grant itself is not utilized for what it is supposed to be doing and what is it that the provinces are adding to what is there. And on that question too, how are we going to make sure that even this 20% does do what it will be referenced to be doing? My second question, this one maybe I will also refer to the background and the dynamics of the country that you are in. Maybe let me put my background here. Coming from the rural area, growing up there, to have a pit toilet that is decent, it was a privilege. Now I know it's not a privilege, it's something that's supposed to be there. What I want to ask my question even on the newspapers during the weekend, and I know it's a question that has been raised in today, is to say, when are we eradicating the pit toilets? There are places where we cannot have waterborne toilets, not because we don't like, even within our families themselves. Once we have a decent pit toilet, that is decently to the people who live there. So now I want you as a department to talk to that issue. When we look at the issue of norms and standards vis-a-vis the issue of pit toilets, what should we have in mind, you know? Because there are areas where even the municipality, sometimes IDP, where we build the toilets, not the waterborne toilet, but those are the pit toilets that are that are decent. As to say, when we talk of the eradication of a pit toilet, what are we referring to you as a department? Go to the areas like Henry, where I was born, to have the toilet vis-a-vis that waterborne toilet. I will never get that one anytime soon now, but if I had that decent ventilated pit toilet, what I was saying, talking to the decency of the Bernard and the teachers, I just want you to hear the understanding, then you connect it with the norms and standards that you are talking about of the basic services that you need to be getting into school. So that, that's why I say maybe the background sometimes they say a lot on how we do it. Can Ms. Kemafuku, on slide 17, I would love you to go to slide 17. Thank you. Yes, that's it. There is mathematics which we have done there in Kemafuku, you know, 17. But for me, what I want to explain to us as a community today is to say what is, because today we are speaking to the acidic problem, not to the backdrop of what is there in the community, but what is added as the acidic since this inception in 2011. What is the balance of it? You have spoken to the issue of those red tools, about 65 tools and all that. Because what I want us to have a clear picture now, where are we? What is the balance? Where are we going? There are so many numbers of here, but when I thought as you cut that slide, I said I cannot say exactly out of the 129 that the 93 that was completed, that you had said, there are others that have been made, then it affects the 213 of the incentive that you have spoken about, of which it should affect the total balance at the bottom, so that we have a clearer picture today. The RCD is nearing to an end, but are we turning way nearer to achieve the target that we have for RCD from the inception? Lastly, I know DVD, you are going to be responding to this one, but on our basis, really, I think I forgot my memory away. As a committee, we did have a stakeholder meeting with the Western Cape people when to come, because it was a concern when the Western Cape, there was so many noise when it comes to the issue of regional school, the major school, and what that. But one reason that came sharply, of which we took as a portfolio committee, was a reason where they were raising the issue that yes, there is the amateur, because we had to show them that throughout the provinces, when it comes to the measure of schools, we will always support them due to the funding of schools, the quality of teaching if the schools are not as well and not by one. But one thing that they raised up and said, we're not opposed to the rationalization. We are opposed to the conversation that were not made. Hopefully that's the matter that we brought back then to the province to say, if the stakeholders are saying the province did not follow well the consultative method, they were not aware, they wake up, because some of them, they could even say, you know, we wake up, we're told that the school is going to be closed without any information. Of which, if that was the case, as we always say, even with other provinces, when it comes to the issues of consultation, we can never make the school without consultation, without those proper channels that you follow. Of which I think the department then will even respond to that as and Stephen, with other provinces, when it comes to the issues of contraception, we even get that going to the Eastern Cape, going to Northern Natal, Limpopo, and I think with all other provinces. How are you managing that? Because if it is not well done, really, we always have noise and the delays more and more in eradicating these non-viable school, and sometimes they even use the improper structures. But for that community, no matter even if the buildings are improper, they're dangerous, if you did not consult well, let's just say, we are about to close the school because of 1, 2, and 3, and we have that consultant, it's going to create a lot of noise. Thank you so much, Mr.
Let me start since you have asked me to clarify the issue of what they can. I must be very sure that really I'm not familiar with the outcome of the of the case of what they can. But I know that the minister was one of those who was with MEC in that process. So really, which indicates that I mean, but you must, Chair, must emphasize that as I indicated earlier on that where this process started, we just focus on SASA, Section 87. And SASA, remember, it just says the school must make a representation to the MEC. There were no guidelines. So that's why I think with the guidelines, those guidelines are very clear in terms of what needs to happen. As I indicated, all those areas. One of them is consultation. So if the local branch decided to support the community because they saw that maybe the department did not follow what is in the guidance, I think it's a different matter. But this is the government position, correctly pointed out. Then there was a question in terms of what is the impact on children? What will happen to these men? Remember, as I indicated, if you look at the main purpose of rationalization is aimed at improving the quality of education, expediting the sorting of schools, promoting access to schools, and ensuring the retention of them. So, at the heart of this process, the interest of the men. So that's why I said our guidance to provinces that, for instance, stated that if you don't have money for school and transport, you don't have school to go to school. So, but what interest, I mean, we have to put the interest of the land. There was a question in terms of what do we do in terms of monitoring. Deliver in many schools. I think the common issue here that I must concede, as we have already discussed internally in the region, what needs to happen now is for advocacy to be on the ground so that you don't rely on the cost. So we'll have, I hope the committee will also realize that it's humanly impossible, for instance, to visit all 1,900 schools, public schools, for instance, to take care. But to draw a sample so that you can go and verify whether the building, the building has been handed over. Because the guidance, I think that once the school has been smashed, then the vacant building must be handed over to the Department of Public Works. We have to go do the visit with our colleagues from HR training, dealing with teacher placement, and see whether all teachers have been placed accordingly, all principals have been placed. So that's why we agree that we'll have to do that on-site monitoring, drawing a sample so that we can verify whether what we have been told really by our colleagues in provinces, especially around these issues, is really true.
Maybe And by the way, we can ask again, is there any time frame to say they're closed in school 3 months, you know, so it must be handed over so that we can have even something to hold them on, as you say, this school has been standing like this for quite a long time, but nothing yet, you know. Are there any guidelines when it comes to that? Same thing with the desk, you know, take out your resources and whatever, and then hand over within this stipulated time that
No, there's no timeline. Maybe that's the thing that we can we need to enhance the guidelines to include that. Because one of the things that is we're picking up, for instance, after our visit in northern areas in PD, then the following year I visited a few schools in Sweden. One of them is mess. They messed about 3 schools in one. Then the principal said to me, "Hey, you know what I've seen here is that I think the psychological impact, because the behavior of the kids, because they came to this new school, has changed because it's a new environment. So we're looking in terms of the, as well as the concept paper, to see how can we maybe deal with the support that need to be given to those learners, because it's not a mechanic process. One member was saying that it's like you're uprooting the family here. So we're looking to that chairperson to put the timelines in terms of handing over of business. But what I want to do as I indicated is to verify whether firstly that has been done. I think the issue of Western Cape Houghton, we take a note of the chairperson, will include them in the next report. It's just that our focus was mainly on those where we see the impact of small schools really is affecting the performance of whether there was a question in the former whether they looked at the criteria before they merge. That's one of the things that we verify through this on-site verification or on-site visit to see whether there's no school that has been merged but no scholar transport that have been provided. The placemaker principal, I think I spoke about that, but multidisciplinary team that would look into that. The state of roads chairperson, whether there's any relationship between the department and Department of Roads. Remember, this is a provincial matter. It depends on the provincial executive. I know, for instance, in Eastern Cape, the provincial executive decided that the scholar transport will be provided by the Department of Transport, as well as in KZN. But I know that during the term of the previous MDC, there were plans also to reflect back to the Department of Education. So what is required is that when there's that decision by the provincial executive that Department of Transport will do this function, then there must be an MOU between Department of Education and the province and the Department of Transport. But the status of roads, I mean, I fully agree with the comments expressed by Robert Smart. Really, I was in Eastern Cape last month, heading over a mobile library in Kambomo. It's in the city. The road was so bad. You know, like you, chairperson, as you get it, I'm from a rural area, a show. It's about 20 k's is traffic, but our gravel, every month there will be a grater, because to fix a gravel road you just need a diesel and a grater, that's it. So I think that's an issue that maybe we'll engage, we'll communicate with our teachers so that we can engage with the Department of Transport, especially to me, especially in Eastern Cape, that's where, because we've been opening schools there where you would drive terrible roads and come to a beautiful school. Because the road, I mean, it's one of the factors that may even demotivate teachers to go and select to teach in those schools. So it's very, very critical. The main thing that normally comes out in terms of typologies, especially in KZN, when the school is named after the chief, maybe the chief was a warrior. So now if you want to take that name, so, but at the end, the interest of, the governing body, if they agree that really, maybe we can look other things that will be named after the chief. Because to look the current environment, that name may not be desirable. Because it may promote maybe culture of violence. So those are the things. But at the end of the day, the department does not impose names, because the name must come from the community. The reason for objecting in its opponent, normally, it's, you know, it's sentimental value. I mean, if you close the school, the community, are now they are attached to that institution. So also, as I indicated, sometimes friends, that the school is named after the chief. So, but what we normally do, and also the minister advises us to do, is to show value of native school. Maybe that's why Honorable Davis, through you, Chair, there is less resistance. Because it's to demonstrate to parents, to say, look, in terms of finding notes, if you've got 21 learners, it means you're supposed to get one learner. I mean, one educator. Then look at your performance. You kind of met comments and general. So the implications, the cost-benefit analysis. So that's why now, in most cases, especially in this case, even parents normally come with solutions to ABCD. They buy into the idea because it's not just on their part. Show the benefits of doing that. But mainly that really is Sukuna, where even you find that the type of chiefs, they will not buy into that idea of major school. But then if the department has to take the learners, then they can teach them the remaining school. Because the best interest of the learner must always prevail to make sure that the learner is put in the school where he or she will get their support and in terms of curriculum delivery. I think, Chair, in summary, as I indicated, we'll enhance the monitoring by DPD. Because so far, we've been relying on the reports, meeting with colleagues, give us the information, but there are issues that are surfacing that really shows that there are children problems that need to be monitored closely in this process, especially the curriculum delivery in those schools and placement of teachers and principals. But, Chair, remember, I was part of the team that visited Shanganan second in one. There we had two principals. The reason why we had two principals is because the other one was about to retire. So the one that was addressing us is the one who's going to take over the running of the school. So those are the issues that normally this rationalization, it can't happen in isolation of other units. That's why I'm very happy that in Eastern Cape, for instance, rationalization is working closely with ASID. So that you don't build a school where there are no learners. So it's a well integrated process, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I'll address questions relating to infrastructure. The question from Honorable Khoza around the needs of prioritized schools. And I will address that together with a question from Honorable Machepi around the planning process, because the two are related. Maybe just to explain the planning process in terms of the IDMS, the Infrastructure Delivery Management System, is that we, or provinces rather, identify a school that has to be in a project list that they submit before the beginning of the financial year, but that process is a rolling process that happens every year, which starts around August of the previous year, where schools are identified based on the condition assessment of the school. A school that is on condition 1 to condition 3 is a school that needs immediate attention, and schools that are on condition 4 and 5 are schools that can be accessed at a later stage. So in terms of that model, we expect that all the schools that are in condition 1 to 3 should be on the project list. However, it's not that every school that is on condition 1 to 3 will be on a project list, because that is also influenced by the available budget. Now what happens is that you would have X number of schools in the province that are on that conditionality, but they will be addressed in terms of the availability of the budget over a period of years. And that is why currently, initially we were working on a project list of a period of 3 years, which is an MTM. But since the 2013-14 financial year, we are working on a project list of over 10 years. That we have your estimated budget in terms of the MTM for 3 years, then you do an escalation over the seven years. But then that project list would be revisited on a yearly basis. So that on an annual basis, then you would have a revised list of schools based on issues that come into the picture. So the project list is available. For instance, for the current financial year, we have received the project list for the 2017-18 MTE. They will be on our website, but we will make them available to members of the committee, because they indicate all the projects that will be implemented in the next financial year and over the MTF and over the 10 years that I have indicated. Now, what we are indicating, Honorable Majesty, in terms of the intervention is that in the course of implementing a project, you might have inclement weather that might delay your project. You might have labor unrest on site. You might have an underperforming contractor. You might have, then there are so many issues. You might have maybe a dispute with the contractor. Now, when you have those kinds of issues, then you have some serious delays. Then what we are advising is that you must have a repository of projects to say, if you see that this project is delaying and things are not moving, then you are able to take one project that is ready to be implemented and activated so that your budget moves and your project list moves. So not that you are chopping and changing between your projects. So at that point, when your project or whatever dispute that you might have had has been resolved, then you go back to that project and reactivate it. For instance, you have a situation where, like, I'll give an example with the precinct. We have currently a dispute with a service provider called Crane. It's a consulting firm. They were doing about 50 schools in the Eastern Cape. I mean, in the precinct. Why am I always going to the Eastern Cape? In the precinct. That dispute has been ongoing for the past 6 months, to the effect that we have not realized any expenditure on those projects that are implemented through trade. And if we had projects that are ready to be activated, we would be taking that money that should have been used on the 15 schools implemented by trade, reactivated those projects so that our expenditure moves until we get this result, because now it's going to court, because we have tried arbitration, we have tried all other means. but it means that the more than 110 million that was allocated to those schools for trade has not moved. And that is why if you look at the expenditure in Free State, it's very low, and it's one of those issues. But also to respond to a question that was raised, for instance, the same thing with Free State. What we have done now, we have assisted the province to have the services of the project management unit. In January, we appointed two engineers and two quantity surveyors that are working with the Free State Department of Education to assist them with project management. Because one of the issues that we identified was that the Free State Provincial Department has been unable, and that also would address one of the issues that Honorable Makoto raised, has been unable for some reason to attract properly qualified people into that infrastructure. So an issue of capacity has been a problem, in a sense that even the issue, the example that I was referring to with trade, could have been resolved if we had properly qualified people managing that unit, but those issues have been resolved as we speak. Now, I think I've addressed the question from Honorable Machete that is the budget allocated on targeted schools. The question, the answer is yes. When you allocate a project to a school and it goes into the project list, which we call a B5, you also allocate a budget. You allocate a budget, what you refer to as a construction budget, and also we allocate a budget that is referred to as a consultancy budget. That is your design teams and all that model. Then we have a total budget for that particular project, and we monitor that as we move. The Honorable Musman, the question of school being Section 21 school does not mean that we abdicate our responsibility to maintain that school. Remember, we have what we refer to as, I'm still going to come to a question relating to toilets because it relates to the question that was raised by the chairperson, so I will address them together. Honorable Mr. Mandi, the issue of Section 21 schools, remember, we have what we refer to as day-to-day maintenance, which the Section 21 schools address from their norms and standards for school funding budgets. But you also have your preventative maintenance and condition maintenance and so on. Those are addressed from your provincial budget, from the energy and so it doesn't mean that when a school opts for Section 21 status, then it's going to be neglected in terms of maintenance. Similarly, the answer is the effect of electrification, whether it's biased towards urban schools rather than rural schools, it's actually a perception effect. I'll tell you why. One of the first projects that I got involved in when I joined the department was to provide solar panels to rural schools in 2017. The unfortunate part, and you raised the question of, I don't know if it's, but there was a member who raised a question around solar. I think it was about 4 years. Now, I think that project involved around 800 schools. The last time when we did a check, only less than 50 of those schools still have those solar panels. For some reason, you put in a panel today, tomorrow it's gone, stolen. We still have not found a theft-proof mechanism of ensuring that those solar panels stay in schools. Even in the current program, where you have ESCOM indicating that a particular village is not in their plan for the next 10 years in putting solar panels, we are even opting now to go for wind turbines, which are a bit expensive. But so far, it looks like our criminal element has not found a way to take them. So when it comes to solar panels, it's a vicious cycle because you put them in tomorrow, they're gone for one reason or another. So if that is what creates a perception that we do not care for rural schools, but we do. For instance, if you look at our affiliate schools, we spend a lot of money to get ESCOM to pull a line from wherever it is to our affiliate. I can give an example in one of the villages, I remember the name. our city line had to go through a village. And we had to stop that project because that community said, we do not have electricity, but you are putting a line through our village to your school at the end. So until we electrify our village, this line is not going to go to your school. And we had to get help from you to assist us in doing it. So those are the challenges that you deal with on a daily basis. With regard to water supply, you correctly mentioned, Honorable Musiman, that the drought played quite a significant role in terms of the situation in our rural provinces. You have provinces, we have boreholes, you sink boreholes, the borehole runs dry. We, in where you want to provide water in northwest, for instance, I remember in one project we had to sink about 5 holes and we couldn't find water in that. And you do not have reticulation, it's a very rural village, you do not have water reticulation in that village. So what we then rely on is to put in what we refer to as rainwater harvesting tanks. But in the absence of rain, then you have to negotiate with the municipality to transport water to those tanks. Unfortunately, I have to be honest, our municipalities are not very reliable at times to do that. And that is the challenge that we are dealing with. And the protocols that I mentioned in my presentation with COFTA and different entities, we hope that will assist us to address these kinds of challenges when we rely on a municipality to assist us to provide those services. Because as a department, we do not have water tankers that will go and draw water from a dam and deliver to schools. We are relying on other government entities to assist us. The question of billing for electricity, I had hoped Mr. Mbanza would touch on it, but I know that because the billing is we provide the service and it's a finance matter. I know there are discussions going on with COFTA and the different entities. The last time, I won't go into it, but I remember the last time there was a matter, the matter was supposed to be presented to cabinet to find a solution, but I don't have details on that. Honorable Boshoff, the 380 schools that do not have access to adequate sanitation, that is why at the beginning of the presentation I tried to sketch a picture of the nonsense balance to say, yes, we do have schools that do not have sanitation, which are a target in terms of the first 3 years of the nonsense balance. And where we did not meet those targets, that is what we are struggling to achieve or moving towards being achieved by the end of the financial year. The next level in terms of the nonsense standard is to address schools that do not have adequate sanitation. However, the implementation of nonsense standard is not a linear process that you wait for 3 years to finish then you start. It's a parallel process. If you look at provinces like Gauteng and Western Cape, they do not have schools that do not have sanitation. So they have moved into the next level. Similarly, your rural provinces, it does not mean that because you are still dealing with the balance of 80 schools that do not have sanitation, then you have the 380 must wait. And that is what we are looking at. If you look at why we are exceeding the target in terms of provision of some of the basic services, this is exactly what we are doing. But what we are also looking at, I mentioned earlier on that we are receiving project plans from provinces for the next financial year. And that is what the team and the city is interrogating to find out that where are we in terms of a particular province. If, for instance, as honorable members say, there are these 380 schools. Are these 380 schools in the project plan for the next financial year if they are not going to be addressed in this current financial year? So that kind of a process is ongoing to ensure that what is not achieved is factored in the next year's financial year. The school for the deaf, honorable member, I will have to go back and because I remember there was a plan to provide a school, a special school in the province. However, and it is something that we are also nearly said fighting, we are not fighting with the province. you'd be aware that there is a boarding school in the middle of the area that was currently completed. If you could, thank you very much, ma'am. That project, and we even raised it to the level of the MEC and the Premier, that project was not initially in the project plan of the province. So to that effect, that project, I think, it cost around 200 million. So what happened is that that project took money that was meant for other projects in the province, because it was a paid project for something. So that is, we raised that matter even to the Minister, even to Treasury. At some point, we wanted to stop that project because it was not budgeted for. Money had to be taken from other projects like water and sanitation to fund that project. And we even took it to Treasury to say, can we stop? But at the end of the day, as Honorable Davis says, what effect would that have on your learner? So that is what comes first. You say, okay, but let us let the project continue. We are not going to disadvantage the poor learner. But at the same time, we need to deal with the provinces in terms of following proper processes. There was a mooted boarding school in Mutabela, which we indicated clearly to the province that that is not going to be funded from the EIG. The province must find money to fund it, because we want to make sure that our priorities as the national department are met first. So those are kinds of issues that we deal with on a daily basis, Chair. The Honorable Mguni, a monitoring plan on what we report. You realize that in the report we are indicating that we have 8,100 projects that are currently being funded through the different programs. So what we do, the least that we could do, is to sample projects. In the IRM report, what we do, we've got a system that would give us the red line in terms of a particular project. For instance, if a project is not moving from quarter to quarter, then we would target those projects, and on a quarterly basis we have teams going out to provinces to check on those projects to see what is going on, because for all intents and purposes we cannot say we will be able to monitor 8,000 projects. So if in the reporting the project seems to be moving from planning to design on a quarter to quarter basis, then the sense is that everything is moving well in that particular project. However, the issues that we sometimes pick up is that even if a project is moving well, there might be that quality issues on the project are a problem. You know? So that is why we do those sample and targeted visits to schools. I think Mr. Mbanza addressed the issue of what happens when the school is closed. That is why we are intensifying our relationship with local government, because what needs to happen is that, remember, the Department of Public Works is the custodian of your assets, of all government assets. So those buildings have to be given back to the Department of Public Works. But the Department of Public Works, what it does, it must first start at the local level to say that the municipality has any use that it wants to use this building for instance, whether it's for different purposes. And then from there you will escalate it to provincial departments and national departments, whether you use it as a multi-purpose center or an office for whatever. So that is what should happen to that process. However, I think Mr. Mbanza has advised we also need to look at putting some timelines to say when a school is closed.
Yeah.
Then we should be looking at within a particular period that property has been taken back to the Department of Public Works. However, you have a situation where that has been done and you find delays in our sister department and you find that the business has to be vandalized. So those are some of the things that we need to check in terms of interdepartmental collaboration to ensure that we do not find ourselves in that kind of situation. You also mentioned, Honorable Member, that why do we have only three projects in the Northern and three in KZN. And remember, when we started the project, we were talking about entire bad schools, entire inappropriate bad schools. And that is the case. I know in KZN we have quite a lot of what we refer to as partial inappropriate bad schools. In this case, you might find that you've got one block, which is brick and mortar, which is proper, but the other block is inappropriate. So the intention was that the second phase of ASIDI would deal with those particular issues. Now, the Northern Cape issue is the tricky one. Initially, we had those schools in the ASIDI plan. I think it's about 20 schools. However, the Northern Cape asbestos schools are in what we call embedded communities, that you have an asbestos school in a community that has got that challenge, and that community has to be relocated home. So you cannot start relocating the school on its own and leave the community behind. So it was a process. We are taking part in that process that is led by the Department of Environmental Affairs. It's communities in Northern Cape, some in up there in Limpopo, and some in Northwest. So that is a consolidated effort to deal with asbestos communities, and that is led by the Department of Environmental Affairs. What we have done in some instances, for instance, is to ensure that those schools are paved to reduce the dust from the ground. However, it's not a process that has moved with the speed that we really have liked. Honorable Mokoto, the understanding, what are the plans in place and what are the actions to correct and intervene? Some of those we have addressed in the presentation. But the most important thing is that what we do on a quarterly basis, right from the beginning of the financial year, we monitor the performance of the project and we intervene immediately. For instance, if you look at provinces like Northwest, which were underperforming in the previous financial year, we have put in interventions, and that province is performing significantly in the current financial year. But you however have situations where you have provinces like Limpopo that in the current financial year have been underperforming consistently. What we have managed to make sure is that, for instance, the report was at the end of January. But the report that we got last week is that Limpopo is now at 50% plus in terms of spending. However, we have ensured with the DBSA, we have ensured that all the projects that they have allocated contractors are on site. That's what I mentioned to you in the presentation. And those projects are committed so that when we go into the next financial year, the money is committed at the provincial level so that the rollover projects can kick in. The capacity of service providers as well. What we mean by that is that when you appoint a service provider, let's start with your consultant. We have what we call an infrastructure implementation plan. Now, in the implementation plan, you would ask a service provider, how many architects are you going to give me? And of what qualification? How many quantities are there? How many engineers? How many project managers? Take even for instance project managers. If you are giving an implementing agent, say 20 schools, depending on the level of those schools, the industry norm is that you will have one project manager for every 10 schools. Okay? Now you find that in practice, your implementing agents wouldn't do that. Number one, they would give one project manager maybe 20 schools. But what is even worse is what we refer to as the juniorization of implementation. What happens is that instead of giving you a qualified registered project manager, they will give you a project manager fresh from school. Now that project manager does not have experience. And when you go on site, you keep on getting problems in and out. And at the end of the day, that is why it ends up, I'm trying to move past such a problem, you end up having to remove that project manager. When do we intend to fill those vacancies? The intention was that by the end of the financial year, we should have filled the vacancies. But what happened is that the first example of Limpopo, where I was personally involved, we had two engineers, we had three quantity surveyors, we had an architect. Four of them, for instance, our architect came in a month with that. So we are competing with other departments. And what we are currently doing is to review that whole process so that by, we are hoping that by the end of the financial year we will have a report that we will take to the Department of Public Safety and Administration and come up with a retention strategy. But mostly it's about the salaries or the money that we are paying to this resource, because we cannot match what the private sector is giving to our engineers. And so it's something that we have to address with national treasury. But also, there are provinces like your Northern Cape, like your Free State, that we advertise and advertise. In some instances, we don't even get one application for an engineer. Nobody wants to go to Kimberley. But you advertise in Gauteng, you get 50 applications. So that is something that is not within our control. What we have done is also to talk to the bodies, for instance, of SANCHE or South African Institute of Engineers, to assist us. But what we are looking at now is to change the framework, that we have at least one senior engineer, and then we can have candidate engineers before that. So it will be easier to recruit candidate candidates, because the salary levels are slightly lower, and we have a certain movement mentality also. So that is what we are working toward. Address the issue of boarding school. Okay, the issue of boarding school, Honorable Mugato. That is a serious one. The future boarding school, for instance, the one in Amsterdam, I forgot what it is. When we visited it, and we found out that the operational budget for that boarding school runs to about 90 million per annum. So building a boarding school is not an issue, actually. It's very cheap. The operation of the boarding school is a major issue. And to make matters worse, the one in Amsterdam, when we visited it, a year after it was opened, there was a project to maintain and renovate it to the tune of 17 million. Because you put those lemmas in, they vandalize it like nobody's business. So there are operation and maintenance issues that you have to look into before you decide to run projects to be a major problem. And operation and maintenance is the major issue. Building is not actually the major issue. So we are taking promises. Please be cautious. Don't think that boarding school system is a silver bullet. It's not. The last one, I think, from Honorable Koza, the quality of infrastructure, I think I've addressed that. Chairperson, the 20% on maintenance and whether the EIG is utilized for intended purpose. Number one, I mentioned the issue of prioritization. We need to make sure that we ensure that provinces prioritize deserving schools to be attended to. That's number one. After prioritizing deserving schools, we have to ensure that projects are implemented on time. The process of procurement design is done on time. But over and above that, when a project is on site, it is monitored and implemented on time and on budget. So those are the issues that we are looking at to ensure that what is put on the infrastructure plan that the province provides is indeed what happens on the ground. And that is in the presentation we have indicated that even from the DBE, we have intensified our monitoring capacity to ensure that what is put on the plan is what indeed happens. There's a question of pit toilets now. Remember, Chairperson, you mentioned the issue of VIP. you have a situation in rural provinces where you do not have sewer articulation, you cannot provide flush toilets in that community. So your ventilated pit, ventilated improved pit latrine is an acceptable form of sanitation per the guidelines from the Department of Water and Sanitation. So in rural provinces or in rural areas where you do not have sewer reticulation, that is what we provide. The other option to provide is a septic tank. A septic tank requires a lot of maintenance and defludging. So it's something that you have to put in with caution to ensure that you don't just put something there that after 6 months, because that is the period usually that takes for a septic tank to fill up. In 6 months, the septic tank would be full. There won't be services for honey suckers to come and remove the platform, especially in rural areas. So those are kinds of things that you need to take into consideration. However, what we are doing, the report that we were given, that there are provinces that did not meet the targets of the non-state standards by the 29th of November. Where it is an actual pit toilet, this is what we are looking at to ensure that by the end of the financial year, those have been eradicated. If for some reason they have not been eradicated, we are getting a sense that provinces like the Eastern Cape might not meet the target. This would and should enjoy the first priority in the 2017-18 financial year to ensure that these are the very first projects that are going to be implemented. So basic services, and the minister always says that basic services is a human right. So these are the things that we need to make sure that we address those. The last one, Chairperson. Slide 17 should be read in conjunction with slide 36. In slide 36, we are indicating current projects in that are running in Aquila. I mentioned that we have 510 projects as a baseline, 174 completed, 119 are under construction. Now that gives you a balance of 217. The 217 are projects that were subject to measures and rationalization in the Eastern Cape. Then you have 65 out of the 217 that were closed, 61 and 91 are being implemented. Now if you go to Slide 36 tries to give more meat to that particular, those particular numbers in terms of 32 rationalized schools, where are we, CSP appointed, assessments completed, design and documentation, procurement of contractors. Your 61 schools, same thing, PSU appointed to manage the project, specifications completed, design and documentation in process. Then you have the reallocation of 20 schools because of underperformance of IDT, and this has been reallocated to the DBSA and to the Kuka Development Corporation. And then you've got 5 projects that are done by the Free State Department of Education. 5 schools are contractors are on site, and 1 school which had a dispute has been resolved, and the project has been advertised. I know I've been a bit wrong, but I tried to address all the questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Banza, for responding to all these questions. And I remember that I know today I have not shown certainly with our baby too hot. Too hot. My apologies for this. The technician has come to try me. So the venue out of, I think it's also crazy that so much has happened, right? Okay.
Should be useful by now.
I don't know. I was thinking of this heat very fear now something interesting, you know.
So I really apologize for what is happening. It's just beyond our control. He has tried, just went out there, I think. But I think we are nearing the end of our meeting, because as I indicated at the beginning yesterday,
The second one is not that much of a presentation, really. It was a question that was raised yesterday, of which it has even come up from this very first presentation and today. How do you validate the information that you get from the provinces? Because it goes directly to what we have been getting here and the questions that you are coming up as members. So let it not be a long presentation, but a response to the question that you always raise as a committee when it comes to the farewell, go well, the ladies, I can see, you can't take the seat. I can see you really cannot take it. But otherwise, thank you very much for the first one. Really, when it comes to the issues of infrastructure, we'll never get to an end, but we'll always take each other as we move on and try and respond to what we're asking. But it's one area that you are very interested in as a committee. We know it's a lot. When it comes to a large percentage of our budget, it goes to the issues of infrastructure, and that is where we talk to the issues of human rights and human dignity and so forth. So really, we are very happy on the presentation. So Dr. Mikli, just let us then briefly so on the presentation, it won't be long really. For the presentation itself, don't exceed 10 minutes so that we see members have got questions, then we are out of this kitchen that you are in.
Thank you, Chairperson Mr. Mbapanda, for the presentation.
Okay. Chair, I think some of the issues that you correctly objected was dealt with in the first presentation, but I thought maybe we have to reserve time for discussions because the presentation was circulated. Just to highlight the reporting areas so that the work has been known as what are the mechanisms of all the areas that we normally report on as a department. The first one is APPs or program information. Then the school, this one is self-reported information from provinces. The second one is school readiness. I think this one, Chair, that's the one where before the closure of schools, we send a team to assess the readiness of schools. Then during the opening, we also do those things that come and present the reports to the committee. Then the reports on level of provincial funding of schools. These are the chapter 2. Here, these are reports that we extract from the provincial budgets. And what we do here, Chair, we even meet with provincial colleagues. I chair those meetings where the CFO with all program managers will come and account in terms of their expenditure per program. We also use these meetings to see whether the provinces that are prioritizing those programs that are prioritized by the sector. So you have the first program 10, the priority projects of the department, then the additional one for the province. So then the other ones, the important progress with transfer of school of funds to schools here, chapter 10, the school funding norms. So here, we know that the school funding norms that provinces are required to fund schools at a particular level. So we also report on this. Then the estimate of provincial revenue and expenditure, as well as monitoring of conditions, grants, and financial reporting. Chairperson, maybe let me just, these are an example of the reports. As you can see there, I think what I would like to is the case. Yeah, I think to me that's the crux of the matter. Many chairperson, especially let me deal with APPs and medium-term strategic framework indicators. What we have done as a sector, in fact, we started that process in 2009 because in the sector there was huge confusion in terms utilization of these indicators. When the AG go into the province to do the audit, they will have certain expectations. Provinces will have different expectations. So we decided to create, which to me is the most important mechanism of verification, to create headcom subcommittees of this committee consists of officials from planning as well as officials from M&E in the province. So we meet with them. Then, for instance, if I can, in 2009 we met. We also had a long indicators in the sector. We said, okay, let's prioritize looking at the political mandate at that time. The priorities, then we reduced those indicators. Then we called the AG to say, AG, here are the indicators as a sector that we are reporting on, and here is the source of the information. And we also defined, say, as a sector here, we can't report. We'll have to then say, where else can we get this information? Then in some cases, we, as you can see in those quarterly reports, we use it in South Africa, for instance, because if you want to know about the households, then the best mechanism to get the information then is in South Africa. So we agreed upon all those areas. So there's no confusion when the AG comes to a different province, they will be having the same information like in Gauteng, Limpopo, etc. So, that's one level of, so then also, for instance, in AMIS, we do have a headcom subcommittee, but the one that I wanted to highlight first is the one that was not there, that we put in place so as a form of mechanism. Also, on-site verification, for example, of schools and sites, school readiness monitoring, as I indicated, that before the closure of schools, we do also visit, physically visit the schools as part of verifying what we normally get through our colleagues in provinces. So internally, there are also mechanisms by strategic planning and reporting headed by intelligence. There's a process whereby the data that is presented here should be signed off by the GGG or the branch head responsible for that. In financial information, Chair, one source that we use to verify the provincial data is Vulindlela. You know, Treasury is a Vulindlela system, so all the data, the financial information, is normally there. I know that in most cases where the discrepancy occurs, in most cases it's about on service delivery, where we'll say the school has been provided with this, then when you go physically there, you find that it's not there. So that's why I said earlier on that one of the things that we decided to do is to have this multidisciplinary team so that we do the sample and go and verify that information. The other thing maybe that was not included in the report that we introduced also, I think in 2012, if I'm not mistaken, is the school monitoring survey. The school monitoring survey, we introduced Chair because, as you know, most of the data that you collect from provinces is self-reported. So now, there are indicators where really, if you want credible information, you need to send an independent service provider to go and do an observation, like for instance, the curriculum coverage. Can you imagine if I would send a form to all schools, or I would say on SSMs, just indicate your curriculum coverage, your topics covered, your sequencing, your pacing, all of them, they would say, no, fine colors. But then you need an independent service provider that you go there, do that assessment, so that you can have a credible information. So that's one area that going forward, that as a sector, we'll institutionalize so that we know that at least every year we have this information that we can be able to turn on. Chair, really, these are witnesses for remedial action. I think members can look at them, see whether there are gaps that we still need to close. One of them is the strategic planning that they are currently doing is to design the standard operating procedures. Also, even internally, the DG has been very, very strong that we must have norms and standards to say so that as a province, I mean, you must know exactly what it is that you need to report on, as well as DPE, we should have the common understanding in terms of what reports that are expected from. So in summary, I just highlighted a few things, but in that question, we are happy to take those questions and inputs as well.
Thank you very much for that. So let me just say the first one is, and maybe I did not get you well, to say where do we put in the services of private providers with reporting? What, you know, maybe I'm asking that question from the angle to say, you are there to be in all the provinces of the official, is it down to the school level where the principal is to come up with the report? Are we, do you want to say when you are reporting, you have correctly put it as to say maybe you'll get those, you know, those reports, but for me, what I'm saying to the whole system, where do we need these services of the private providers to the private services when it comes to the issue of poverty? Where do we see the weakest link? You know, we need information, we need data. We've got all these levels in the system. So what are we saying to all that? That is why I say I might not have got you correctly as to say one thing that you were referring to, but I was a little bit concerned as to say, can I be clarified on that one? Honourable member, let me open up. It was a short presentation and we have a question, but if ever there are questions and additions. As we always say, the validation of the information. Where do we go wrong? What I like, even the beginning of the government, agreement, somewhere, somehow, we don't get the correct data, the correct information. But maybe the way we're shortened, we are pressurized of going out, we might also miss the point even now. Let me open up for you. Honorable Colonel.
Thank you very much. On the collection of data, where does SA SAMS fit in? And when does the issue of the previous information that you are given in terms of annual reporting, right in March, where does it fit in?
Chairperson, I think it's worrying that we as DBE, you can get incorrect information. And here we do not have the sense of what are consequences that are given to those who are giving the false information. Because really, if you would say in the cases of service delivery, then people will claim that something has been done, and when you go there, there's nothing. Then what happens to those who are responsible for that?
I just want to thank the department for this presentation. I think that whatever that we have highlighted there is the
educators and the generation. I think really they have to be really taken up. And you know also that when you look at this part of this function in most departments, in most in other levels as well, is the least budgeted for activity. So I would suggest that maybe even when your budget as you go for the budget, for the next budgeting session, for this, as we go through the budgeting session, what we must do, we must make sure that we strengthen by providing funding for the activity so that it doesn't become just a wish for the department. It becomes something that is truly actionable, because out of it we can come up with something that's tangible. And then, Chairperson, on the recommendation, I don't really understand what what is being suggested there. Maybe please can clarify the recommendation that we have sent to the speaker. I think that it is, you know, certain connotations that we can't really rely or trust the information that we get from government. I don't know whether I'm interpreting your statement.
No, Chair, thanks. Maybe let me start with the last one. Really, I think, Chairperson, in terms of the annual performance plans, there are indicators there. Some of them, it's data that you can get from SSMs. For instance, the number of schools that are uploading data by units. So the enrollment data, it's on SSMs. But there's data that is not, that cannot be made available on SSMs. For the same reason that I indicated, that because the data that's there is self-reported. And any data that you put on SSMs, we always put mechanisms to validate it through the system. For instance, if I can talk about enrollment, then there's a requirement that there must be an ID number that we verify that with all affairs. I made a long presentation last year about the entire process. So this presentation is about strategy, reporting and strategy planning. Because the strategy planning requires data that goes beyond your SSMs. For instance, that you train teachers. So then for that to get credible information, you need an independent person who can even verify what that the provinces would be reporting on, as I indicated, in terms of the support. For example, if you look at in terms of our action plan, we need to report about the support that district officials give to schools. Now, to send an instrument to those people, they'll say, no, we give support to all the schools. You get what I mean? So there are indicators that we identify in medium-term strategic framework, MTSF, that really, with existing system, if we were to use them, really the data that you get may not be taken. You need an independent service provider. That's why we introduced what we call school monitoring survey as an instrument to collect that information. But in terms of the relationship, as I indicated, between APP and SSMs, those are two different things. There are only few, those that we collect from SSMs, we don't have a problem because there are mechanisms within the system to do the validation. That if you put it audited by the AG, those systems, but there are issues that are beyond that. But maybe last teacher, you see this thing, it's about also trust. Because as officials, if I get a report from my colleague to the province to say, so number of schools are provided with water, electricity, can't question that. But then, that's why I said earlier on that maybe as DPE, our role now is to verify this data through our this mechanism of drawing samples. Also remember, also Chair, that in terms of powers and functions, schools are under the provincial jurisdiction. So we can't, I don't think we can go unannounced to a school and to verify the information. So we need to follow that protocol so that we don't also ruin relations. Because remember, when you go to a school, you will be basically saying, I don't trust the data that province will give me, so I want to see myself what's happening. So, to me, that's why this issue of school monitoring before the closure and opening, it's a good exercise. Even personally, I've participated and I saw things that really, especially in the same case, where I saw that a number of schools, they had no systems. So when I was telling them about SSMs, then they jumped to it to say, no, look, really, we want to have this system. So I've met with the province, then we're rolling out SSMs in the province. So as I indicated, Chair, really, it's a very dicey issue in terms of the credibility and the trust, because as I indicated, we're professionals. I would expect that if I get a report from my counterpart in the province, they might have done some verification at the district level, because there's a district director, there's a second manager, all those people, they're closer to schools in terms of verifying the information.
Thank you very much. But what I like today, I'm saying today, this was the test of time. So far since here, how many are we here? So less than 30. Yet, we are saying we've got educators where every day and learners, they have to, they are subjected to these harsh conditions like this. We expect them to teach. We expect good results. And when they don't have them, we're the ones that, you know, were in front to say they're not doing well. So today, the pity really is so bad when we're under these conditions. But for me, it says there are so many people out there that are subjected to this day in and day out, but they have to perform. So thank you very much, honorable members, for performing the way you have performed today. Thank you very much, our colleagues from the department, to be able to work under these harsh conditions that we're exposed to. But I think we're just, this was just a, you know, we're just facing, I don't know, in a very small scale to what are people subjected to almost every day out there. Thank you very much for all those presentations. Thanks, honorable members. Only the round will be in contact with you for our oversight to housing on the last week of March. Surely by next week, everything will be finalized. We need to go to that Tuesday. What holiday is it? On the 21st. Yeah. We'll be going there to like, what will be happening on the news after when you go to housing. Enjoy your lunch.